you're so tough. You're so tough for your soul. You're so, you like it too. Hello and welcome to Average Takes, where we get to talk about a specific topic. And today, she's had so many parties over the years and has organized and built so many communities. So there's no one that's right for this topic. My friend, Sia Fodaidi, thanks for coming to the podcast today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about organizing parties and building communities because they kind of go hand in hand. And it's something you are very well versed in because you've been doing this for years now. So let's start with, do you remember like what it was like organizing the very first party you did, and what, why do you find it important to build communities?
Yeah, but I almost like don't remember the first one. I know that I used to go to a lot. Like when I was younger, we were, Mr. C and I were part of some clubs and groups, you know, that would host parties. And this was back in the very early 2000s, almost like 2000, 2001, 2002. And a lot of it was swinger stuff. And then there was some, you know, some kink, more kink oriented. It was always very hard to find all female events, you know, because that's something that I was really exploring when I was in college, is kind of all female communities. You know, it's just, there's a variation, obviously, like clubs, you know, can be where anybody can walk in, anybody from the kind of the street, completely public, you know, it's a very mixed bag, more private events where it's vetted, you know, and you have to be a member and you have to sort of, you know, produce photos and kind of have a certain, you know, certain characteristics, those can be really different. So, so I definitely remember being part of a lot of those things and not really thinking about hosting my own, except like in very small, like, you know, we would host like little orgies, you know, like small scenes, right? With maybe a couple of couples, like things that I wouldn't now refer to as a party, things that I would just refer to as like a typical scene for me. I mean, I think to me, a party's got to be more than like 8 or 10 people, you know, anything less than 8 or 10 people is still kind of a scene that I've put together.
Right.
But you know, once you get bigger than that, I mean, to me, a party is like 40, 50. And then it's really a question of the what it is that you're trying to achieve. So I, in terms of community building, on female only or femme focused stuff, there is a group of women that I'm, you know, friends with that has been hosting a really great event every couple of months. There's no need for me to compete with that event. It's a great, really well done. I do invite a lot of women. So as I come across sort of new women in the community who aren't part of it, who I think are great, and I think they would benefit from sort of being plugged into the female community in New York, you know, I invite. Or I suggest that they go and get vetted and sort of be part of this. So that one, you know, that sort of, you know, takes care of itself. And then the stuff that I do personally is a couple of times a year around my birthday in the summertime. And then kind of during the holidays, you know, in the wintertime, I do a couple of sort of bigger events. They're really meant for my network. I mean, they're meant for the people who play with me all year and play with Mr. C all year. I start with the women. Because again, these are not like all female parties, but they are female focused in the sense that everything begins with who are the women who are attending and what would they like to experience, and let me invite the right men, you know, to kind of round that out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, it's meant to be, some people come to these parties who I don't know, like for the first time. It's pretty rare. But that's a way that sometimes we get to know new people. Let's say a local couple, and they see that I'm hosting something locally and they kind of want to watch, they want to observe, but it's pretty rare. It's usually people that I do know because I match people for parties ahead of time. So in other words, like you're coming to the event and you have partners for the night, for play and for right. the activities that we're doing. And I'm matching people who I've been playing with for the last 6 months or a year or longer, and I know them, and I think they would do well together, but they don't know each
right.
other, you know? And so I'm kind of putting them together, and that's part of the fun for me, where they trust me. They go, well, Indomina, I trust, right? So they trust me to match them up.
That right? should be the title of your book.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll say, oh, the woman says, yeah, she knows the kinds of guys I like, so I trust her to put me with the right guys. And the guys will right. say, oh, you know, she knows if it's a sub, you know, that I want to submit to, you know, kind of a more femdom type of woman, or if it's a bull, you know, he wants to top, you know, people know that I'm kind of matching him correctly. And so that's exciting for me. Sometimes I mess it up because I'm human, but oftentimes it works really well. And then people actually come out of it friends, and then they continue to play together as a result. So you're connecting people then who will take that connection and run with it, which is really fun. Because obviously my network is so big that in the absence of these larger events, a lot of times the people who are in my network will not meet each other, right? I mean, like they won't cross paths because there's just so many of them. So this is the way of bringing them together. Oftentimes where it's like, I think this person would really like that person, but we haven't had an occasion to have a scene together. So let me, you know, for the party, put them together and see how they do. Right. It's also a reward system for the men. Again, the women are my focus, right? They're the people that I want to make happy first and foremost, right? They're my friends. They play with me and Mr. C all year long. And I want to do two times a year where maybe sometimes it's his birthday too. So maybe two or three times a year, something special that we're focusing around them. Women like to also see each other and have that like network together. And so I, you know, I kind of begin there. But in terms of the men who get to participate, obviously there is a lot of men. And so not everybody can get an invite. And so it is ultimately a reward system. Like, you know, you've been playing with me for 3 months, 6 months, a year, you know, you've been really good. You've been doing what you need to do in the scene as a sub or a bull. And I, you know, have enjoyed your participation and I want to give you the opportunity to, you know, experience one of the bigger events, be paired with one of the ladies. And so I invite you to that as a, again, basically it's like one of these like, you know, bull appreciation, sub appreciation, you know, sort of opportunities, right? I appreciate who you are and who you've been with me. And so I want to invite you to this party so you can have a good time. Not everybody likes big parties, by the way. I have playmates who are very shy and they like smaller scenes and they basically say no to bigger parties. It's not their thing. So, you know, it's not a way to reward everybody. Some people you reward with more one-on-one time. You just have to know if the person is more extroverted or introverted and what kind of opportunity presents a reward for them. So that community building element, as I said, is for me, it's exciting a couple of times a year because I don't have the bandwidth to do it more than a couple times a year because it's a lot of work and I obviously am doing it on a pro bono basis. So it's, you know, it's a couple times a year I have enough sort of, you know, bandwidth and time, capacity, patience, to do a couple a year, to think of a theme, something fun, and then especially to kind of bring that community together so people can meet each other and, you know, continue, again, even outside of the party, maybe continue to keep up with each other.
And like you said, it takes a lot of time, a lot of planning. So I guess, what are some things that go into planning the parties and then specifically organizing these communities you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the most difficult thing is just people's schedules. You know, you've got just lots of, it's all of adults, you know, everybody's is educated and professional, or maybe they're students, and everybody's just got, you know, everybody's got other stuff going on, right? They've got their, maybe their primary partners, they've got school, they've got work, they've got travel, like anytime I choose a date, there's going to be tons of folks who are out of town or, you know, it's not going to work for them. There's some people who don't know their work schedule until much closer to, I mean, the parties are usually on a Saturday night, but there's obviously people who work weekends, work nights. And, you know, some people travel for work and they, you know, so that's, I think that's the biggest challenge really is, I mean, once I've kind of chosen the theme, you know, I usually host at home. So there's like no sort of venue that I have to worry about. I mean, cost is not a really big thing. We do everything fairly low cost and people contribute some money or they contribute, you know, some food or some alcohol. People usually get their own costumes if we're doing something costume oriented. So people kind of like to pitch in, you know, people offer to help. People come beforehand to help set the party up. People stay afterwards to clean up. I mean, there's all kinds of support that happens. So there's very little in the way of that that really is challenging. I think the challenging thing is just there's always an avalanche of people who want to come. So culling down the list and then dealing with the schedules. And, you know, we had a party in December and tons of people got sick because there was a big wave of COVID. And so as we were leading up to that night, it was just, we were losing people left and right to illness. So those are the things that are hard because if you, in a party that's very finely tuned where you have a woman who's coming for a specific group of males or a couple that's coming for specific, you know, whatever other partners, if you lose one of those people or the couple or whatever, like there's, let's say the woman drops out, there's a bunch of abandoned males. So, you know, they're now they're orphaned and you either have to find them another home or they can't come at all. where there's a woman who had a number of males assigned to her and then they drop out and all of a sudden she's kind of alone and doesn't have someone to service her. So I have to find someone as a backup. So those kinds of things are more hard because it's not just a walk in and pick up play kind of party, which would maybe be easier, but I don't know that I want to just host things where people walk in and sort of find their own way. Because it's very hit and miss, right? And my events are meant to be community building. So we do activity together, some kind of fun playing, like not like sex playing, but like playing, like adult play, like where we did the circus or we did like the Roman Colosseum or we do a game show. So it's like, you know, it's like literally playing together as friends. And then it moves into physical. I mean, it's all very little sex. It's all sexual, obviously, but then it actually moves into sex, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's better that it's not just random where people walk in and just kind of scoping each other out. It is better when they've already pre-matched and spoken to each other and connected a little bit and all those sorts of things. But again, the scheduling thing is the challenging thing. And then you have folks who are, you know, who flake. And that often happens with partners. It's people who are newer. Mm-hmm. And maybe they had one experience with me, but now they're kind of scared because it's a bigger group, you know, or whatever it is, right? So I think there's always a spreadsheet that I make. I have a helper, someone who's a friend of mine who helps me with my inbox on Fed and helps me with these spreadsheets for kind of bigger events and also for my trips, my business trips. And so we always make a spreadsheet with kind of everybody and it's color coded and you kind of match all the people up and you kind of envisage what everything's going to look like. And it's always in the days leading up to it that you start to kind of, the spreadsheet starts to change, you know, because some people stop responding or some people get sick or somebody has to travel or like all this stuff starts to happen and you're kind of readjusting all the time. The spreadsheet's evolving. So I always like, I never worry about the location or the logistics or like I said, like, you know, what do I have to buy? How do I set up the house? Like there's never any of that stuff. It's always just the kind of interpersonal bit of sort of who's going to participate and who's committed to participating and then who's sort of, who do we lose? And if we lose somebody, do we have a backfill, right? Of sort of people standing in reserve. And luckily, I mean, a lot of playmates are okay with that. They'll kind of be the backup. They know the party can only support this many people and they know that last minute there'll be people who drop out and then maybe they'll get the opportunity to go. So, which is hard, you know, cause you're keeping your schedule open until kind of close to the last minute. But you know, some people are willing to take on that role of being the sort of backup and oftentimes they end up invited because as I said, there's a lot of last minute changes.
Mm-hmm. Like you had this December. So, one thing, you know, I mean, you have these people, you know, over the years and either they are coming as a reward or they are coming as your friends or just people that have been to your parties and they know how fun it can be. So I'm thinking, like, how much, because they're coming to your party, they have to be part of your community, but how much responsibility do you have for them, like, outside the parties?
I mean, so do you mean like, can they, like, are they getting home safely if they're drunk? Is that what you're asking?
I mean, stuff like that, but just like if someone, say two people met at your party, played, then outside there, like, are you still in a way responsible for what happens outside?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I think yes, in a way, but I don't want to like insert myself too much, right?
Because,
you know, I'm like, I want to be reasonable. I mean, they're adults, right? So as long as everybody's consensual, everybody's happy and people want to kind of build those direct relationships, that's fine. I like being the glue in the middle, right? Mm. Sort of reason that people show up, you know, is because they have a connection with me. Obviously, if people meet each other and they have a good connection amongst themselves and they go off and, you know, do stuff, like, you know, sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it goes against kind of what's good for us in the sense, let's say we may have a female partner that Mr. C and I are playing with, right? Mm-hmm. And then she meets someone else through our events and then she's, you know, becomes monogamous with that person. And all of a sudden we lose our female play partner. But like, well, what am I going to say? I mean, I'm not going to I'm not going to forbid, right? I mean, that's, you know.
Right.
Or let's say that I had a male submissive that I liked, and then he came to an event and met a different female dom and he liked her better. And so he goes off to serve her instead. I mean, okay. Like that's, it's unfortunate, you know, for me, maybe I lose that person, but that's okay. You know, I mean, I'm not, I, like at the end of the day, I don't own anybody, right? I have my husband. So we're together And I do have another relationship, a poly relationship at the moment. I don't always, but right now I do. And then there's some people who are closer to me. You know, my husband and I, Mr. C and I have a girl right now who's sort of owned, you know, by us. And we've had another girl in the past who was, but the vast majority of people are playmates, right? They're not, they don't have a ongoing sort of, you know, like a connection in that way, right? Master slave or that kind of thing. So, you know, like even if something is not in my interest, at the end of the day, I have to be happy for people if they meet each other and they, you know, enjoy each other. And that even if that means that I lose something, right? So it doesn't happen that often, I would say. People continue to want to be part of the community. They continue to want to play. So it's not like a very frequent problem. But I would say certainly I take responsibility for, like, can everybody get to the house safely? Can everybody get home safely? We do some, you know, carpooling and obviously making sure people aren't leaving and driving drunk. We, you know, people who can't get home practically will crash overnight. I do try to I try to know who's playing with who, like not because I want to be invasive, but for the reason you asked, is there a level of responsibility because I sort of introduced? So, for example, just so that I know better for the next event or for the next scene. So if you can imagine again, like if a woman who's come to the party really took a liking to someone and she says, you know, I'm going to see him again next week. And then she sees him and she says, oh, you know, now we're in a relationship of some sort, you know, that I have to understand, does that mean that she's no longer open to the same invitations that she would have been open to before? Does that mean that he is no longer open to the same invitations from me? Does she maybe she'll say, you know, now that I'm seeing him, I don't want him, you know, coming and serving you in your scenes, right? Because now we have a more, you know, like, maybe we only play together or whatever it is, right? So I try to stay on top of what's going on with the people in my network only because I want to know how to, like, when to invite, who to invite, how to, like, make sure I stay on the right side of things and not misstep. You know, because if their new relationship that's now blossomed means that she doesn't want him to come and be a bi-flex daddy to my young, you know, submissive boys, that I need to know that I've lost him out of my roster. But maybe he and she will still come for the next party together, and that way they can still be part of the community that way, right?
Right.
So, but I just need to know what the rules are, right? Or maybe she used to come and play with Mr. C and me, just the three of us, and do impact, but now that she's seeing him, he doesn't want her to do that anymore, or whatever it is, right? Like, so that's really the only reason that I would want to kind of know who is doing what with whom broadly, like not in grave detail, but just kind of give me the broad strokes of what's going on out there that I'm not personally part of, because then I need to know for future reference, you know, where I can include people or invite them or, you know, make them part of things.
Right. Wow. That is a lot of coordination involved though, right? Like, you know,
Yeah. I mean, and that's like I said, I just kind of ask people to just tell me, like, so that I don't have to discover it on my own or kind
Right.
Just, you know, if you let me know, I'm, and people do that. People say, I'm not playing right now. You know, I'm no longer available for this or whatever it is. And as I said, we keep a spreadsheet of everybody. The person who helps me maintains it. And so at any given point in time, we can kind of make note of who is available for what. So if I have something that I'm building, I will know who I can and can't reach out to. And so it is sort of systematized in a way, but the only way to keep it current is for people to kind of tell me where they're at.
That's dope. That is actually really cool, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that people can take into their lives and like their friendships, not even in like partying or kink or whatever, just in general, because people don't talk as much, and actually writing things down and being able to be like, oh, this is that, can make life a little bit easier. I'm going to let you go with this question.
Yeah.
Why is community building important?
I mean, I think that there is a level of consistency that we like, you know, for Mr. C and myself. As I said, we don't have our entire life to devote to kink. We have kids and I have my career, I travel. So we have to fit this into our lives, like around those bigger responsibilities. And so if there isn't a larger community, if there's only a couple of playmates, it is because those playmates also have jobs and career, lives and children, and often it's that much harder to kind of make things work consistently. Versus a bigger community just gives you more depth, so that if next week I have, oh, let's say this is a real example, next week I have a new woman who's been talking to me and would like to come and play, and she's described a scene that she's excited about where she wants to play with Mr. C and me, but she also wants to have a couple of my male submissives watching. Because she wants to be kind of on display. That's so exhibitionism is exciting for her. And then she wants to watch those males together because she's turned on by bisexuality as well. So that means I need two people next week on a specific day, at a specific time when she's available, when I'm available, Mr. C's available. I need two people to come, consistently to show up and do what she's asked for. Like, this is her fantasy, right? If there wasn't a bigger network, it would be much harder to find two men who match the characteristics that we're looking for, are willing to do the thing that we want to do at a specific day, at a specific time, midday on Long Island, during the school day when the kids are away. Just would just be very hard to do. But because there is a big network, right, that is very feasible. I can ask a couple of dozen people, and two very solid options will show up. And we'll have the scene that we want, right? And those people will be happy because they get to participate in something, because maybe on average people get to participate in something a couple times a year, maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So this is going to be their great opportunity to sort of come and play. And the woman is happy because I was able to kind of deliver the thing that she was excited about. And Mr. C is happy because he gets to meet a new lady, right? So it's like everybody's happy. And everybody's happy because the network is big enough, it's deep enough, right, that it can basically deliver. Or if I'm traveling to DC in a couple of weeks. I'm traveling with my baby boy, my partner. He's coming for a couple of days. We want to play when we're there. There's certain like types of playmates he's into. Let's say very sort of like sissy, very femme. I want to be able to deliver that for him. It's I'm excited to take him with me on a business trip and have him there alongside me and for us to have some fun locally. And that's a different city. So I have to have some depth of network there too, right? And so there's a few cities that I have that kind of depth of network in: London, Los Angeles, Boston, DC, Philadelphia, Montreal. Sometimes I go to a new city, so I have to kind of build that network fresh, But that's the point, I think, is like, I just, it is obviously a huge privilege. Right, I want to end on that note. I know that it's a massive privilege to be me, like where I am right now in the FET community, because almost everything I want, anywhere I want it, any day I want it, will show up for me. Right, and it takes a little bit of coordination to your point, but it's like very rare that I would say, you know what, I just got a conference added in May where I'm going to Michigan, and I'm going to be there for a night, and I'd like to. Have some fun that night. I wonder if that'll work out for me. I think it will work out for me, right? Because there's going to be dozens of people who are going to be willing to offer themselves up, right? So that's a huge privilege. I mean, for any person. So it's a huge privilege. And so that's the whole point, I think, of kind of building the network is you're offering people a chance to be to play, to be part of something that is harder to find usually. And then you're giving yourself that depth of network that anytime you really want something, somebody happily shows up to do it. And they feel like they're lucky too. You feel like you're lucky because they show up for you, but they feel like they're lucky to be included. So I think that's the kind of, the symbiosis or the kind of win-win mentality, right? That is behind the building of a larger network, right? As rather than sort of, again, we have some people who are special to us. It's natural, it's human that you end up with some individuals who are closer to you and more special to you. But if you kind of limited yourself to that and you didn't build the larger network, then you're basically at the kind of mercy of when you and they are available. And it may be very rare that, you're available and they're available and you can sort of make something work. So if you don't want to wait, for it to be quite rare, then you have to have bigger scale as a result.
I said I was the last question, but something just jumped into my mind. This is the real last one now. Someone is listening to this, like, I mean, it seems like you are pretty fun and your parties are really awesome and your community is so large. I might even meet someone that might make my life better. And then they're like, I want to jump to your community. Or I want to meet you. Or I want to be part of what you are building. How do they achieve this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be authentic, and you can't be completely self-centered either. I mean, like what you just articulated, I want to be part of this. Well, of course, everybody, not everybody, but many people want to be part of this. You're not alone, right? There's, mm-hmm. I hear from hundreds of people. So I think you have to approach it as like, what can I add? What can I offer to the community, right? Not just like what I want out of it. Lots of men will write and say, I just want to come to your party and bang women. I'm like, oh, wow, that's shocking. I've never heard that before, you know, like, and so if you approach me and you say, I want to come to your party and bang like lots of random women, I'm going to say thank you. But no, we don't need you. Right. So, you know, what are you offering? Right. Do you want to come and do the things that I like? And again, it's mostly folks who are bi-flexible who are going to be able to offer me the things that I want to see. And then in exchange, they can have, you know, they can be part of certain things that they want to be part of too. Right. You know, if you're submissive, you're offering that up. It's like you kind of explain what, you know, are like some people are domestic service oriented, some whatever it is, like you're coming and saying, I would like to be of service in this way. Right. I mean, I think you have to reach out with a good introduction, photos, like people come to me and say, I don't want to show my face. I don't want to show you a photo. I have 4,000 photos on the site with not a single face showing, with hundreds of people who have trusted me not to show their faces. So if you approach me and you act as if you're suspicious of me and you can't show me a vanilla headshot because you think I'm going to expose you, then you're not paying attention. Like you haven't actually looked at my profile. Mm-hmm. And if you're so suspicious, then you should not be writing to me at all. And you shouldn't be playing with me. So that kind of stuff pisses me off in a sense, because again, you know, is that person right that a random individual is maybe somebody they shouldn't be trusting? Yes. I always say to people, don't ever send a nude photo of yourself with a face to anybody, ever. But if I've asked you for a headshot and separately I've asked you for a nude that doesn't show your face, and you're giving me grief about sending me those things, even though you reached out to me, like you're wasting my time, right? Because you clearly can see by my profile, by everything I share, that I am a safe person. And I'm not there to expose you or to blackmail you. So if you're, you know, treating me as kind of with suspicion, I just kind of cut it off, right? So, you know, a good introduction, you know, photos, an explanation of who you are, what you want, when you're available, because my availability is very limited, right? Don't write to me from Louisiana or Australia or wherever. And like, you know, ask to play online or ask to travel to me. I mean, it's just like, you know, everything, having read the profile, right, which says, you know, no one in other countries and cities and like, you know, like this kind of stuff, like, or, you know, somebody who's like twice the age range that I prefer, who's like, yeah, but I know I'm 70, but you should consider me anyway, right? Or like, I'm completely straight, but you should consider me anyway. Like this thinking that you're an exception in hundreds and hundreds of people is not realistic, right? So reaching out to me, I would say, please try to make sure that you actually match the criteria that I articulate. Please make sure that you're approaching in a really open way. Like you're the one approaching me. I'm not approaching you. I never approach anybody, right? Like they're always approaching me. So, you know, come with a description and photos and be authentic and be open. And, you know, be available when you're needed, right? Like when I actually sort of play, you know, don't treat me like a fetish or kink dispenser. Don't treat me like a pro dom, you know, treat me as a human being, right? Treat me like a person who's doing all this for kind of fun and love. So there's just so many ways to do it wrong, I suppose, right? And people do it wrong all the time. And then obviously very many people do it right, right? Where they sort of reach out in the right ways. They make a human connection. They're, you know, responsive, they're flexible, you know, and they're likable. So, I mean, it is at the end of the day, like for me, obviously, I get to choose. I get to choose who I'm with. I'm not a, you know, service provider. I don't take money and provide a service. I just choose who I want to be with. And so anything that somebody can do to make themselves a, you know, like I said, a likable and, you know, interesting sort of person to get to know, who matches my criteria. It's really important. Like if you're sending a resume, but you only match 30% of like, you know, what the job is looking for, you're not going to get the job. Right. No. So all those things I would say are important. But especially I think that this kind of feeling of, I mean, everybody wants what's good for them. I understand that. But if you can't show up and explain how you want to contribute to me, to a scene, to a party, to others, if all you can say is, I want this, like, well, it's not our job to give you anything, you know, like we're all here because we want things too. So it's a collaboration. And if somebody is not at all in a collaborative mindset, if they're just kind of like shopping for a free service, I cut that off really fast. I can usually sense it really easily.
Well, so there you have it. If you want to be part of Siaphrodites community, you've been given a cheat sheet. You're welcome. Thank you so much, Siaphrodite, for coming to the podcast today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're so done for yourself. You're so done for yourself. You're so, you like it too.